form.
Okay. Very nice.
Okay, you remember Thanksgiving as not being very nice outside? It wasn't. But that was always at Grandma's too, wasn't it? At least up until we moved
pretty
up
much
to Chez Nu.
Yeah.
And then when they moved into town,
well, things
it would be out at our house.
Yeah.
And things all changed.
But while it was down at the farm,
seems to me that was always chicken too. I don't remember turkeys. I think they always used the chickens on their own place.
I don't remember turkey either. I remember turkey at our house.
Mm-hmm.
Mother used to have turkey.
Well, it seems to me there'd be big roasting chickens always at Grandma's.
Probably. I don't really know. I can't remember. In any case, whatever it was cut up and ready to eat by the time we got there. I mean, we wouldn't have to watch somebody carve.
Mm-hmm. I seem to remember biscuits, too.
Oh, yeah, biscuits.
Grandma made biscuits.
Oh,
we ate well, you know.
Pies and that mincemeat in the cold room. Mm-hmm. I'd go into
I talked about
the
had them talk about the Depression the other night, and we really didn't have any suffering from the Depression mm-hmm. because food was abundant, and they managed by fast shuffling to save the dairy and the farm. And as Dad says, if anybody had chosen to foreclose, why, we would have lost everything, but nobody chose to. And he and Grandpa were smart to incorporate and to get everything under one debt, which was the land something or other from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the government wasn't about to foreclose because, well, I suppose various reasons. If they foreclosed, what would they do with all this land with nobody on it and so forth? So it was to their interest to keep farmers on the land and help them along.
Want some more coffee?
Okay. So, or maybe just a dribble.
Milk?
No, I'll take it by a first time, try it. So do you remember any specific Thanksgivings except for Grandpa's long blessings? And there wasn't an agenda to Thanksgiving like there was to Christmas.
I don't remember that there was, and I remember they varied. And I do remember a walk out in the snow, in hard frozen ground in the snow, and then I remember that lovely time when we had the sleigh.
Bobsled. I remember that bobsled. I didn't know that was a Thanksgiving, but there must have been some snow at that point then. But I do remember they hauled it behind a truck, not behind horses.
Well, I remember horses.
Oh, well, maybe
a wagon fitted out with runners on Thanksgiving. It was a special treat.
You remember any details other than that?
Bobsled is not what I'm thinking of. That I only remember sitting up in the barn.
Okay, well that's not a bobsled. That was a sleigh. A bobsled has those wooden runners and front thing. It would be the sort of thing they would have hauled ice home from the
River Inn. That's right.
And so forth.
I don't remember ever riding in the sleigh. It was just
the sleigh
just
sat there.
Whatever happened to it?
Somebody borrowed it and never returned it.
Oh, ho, ho.
You know, and they didn't. The farm didn't. They didn't watch their stuff carefully. On the farm.
Boy, that'd be worth a fortune, huh?
Of course it would. Oh, do you remember riding home with the milkman?
Yeah.
Would you sit in our laps steer?
No. I never sat in any milkman's lap. I sat in my daddy's lap and steered.
Well, I would sit in Roscoe's lap or something like that from grade school.
I don't think I ever did that.
And do the steering. And because we sometimes, at the little house, we often went home for lunch because the milkman would be coming by just at noon, and so they'd drive us home and then we'd come back. And
or maybe it was kindergarten. We'd come home for good with the milkman.
That's right, because the taxi didn't run at noon.
No.
So at kindergarten you had to get home somehow. It seems to me us kids went to morning kindergarten.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe on that purpose, so that we could ride home with the milkman. And
so we could get a ride with the taxi in the morning and come home at noon.
That's right. There wouldn't be a ride there at noon to take you to town. But there were plenty of rides coming home at noon. Mm-hmm. Okay, well that's sensible.
Yeah.
But I can remember every now and then coming home for dinner at the little house for noon lunch.
Yeah, I think we probably did.
And I remember particularly, and I think you did too, coming into the house on the wash days and how damp everything could be, and you would write all over the windows because they were just thick with moisture. And I can remember one particular one when we had hot dogs. that menu because I liked hot dogs and they had real skins in those days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember coming into the steamy, steamy house because Mother would have the wash hanging all over, draping all over the house. You don't remember that?
Uh-uh.
Well, that was either Pat or Craig then. It must be Craig that says these things because he said so much. And Pat only had time to say a couple of things before she dashed back to Mississippi again. I've got a little book of hers called I Remember. And that was in there that she gave Grandma several years ago. And one mm-hmm. was coming into the little house on wash day and how she hated it because she kept having to dodge wash. And you remember, of course, sitting on the grill with the heat coming up from the basement
yes.
and getting waffles on our bottom.
Yeah, I remember
and
Pat
cooking
falling
her inside.
I remember Pat falling on it when she was little.
Hmm.
It was red hot.
Getting burnt?
Yeah, and she has that scar on her knees to this day.
Oh, I don't know if I remember that.
I'm surprised she even put that in her little book.
Maybe it's there and I just didn't get it all.
Oh, and I remember pouring water into the buckets that would humidify the house, down into that furnace thing, that mm-hmm. furnace hole.
Dad Patty said that she remembers when every so often Dad and Mother would get on a humidity kick. And then there would be buckets standing all over it with towels hanging out of them.
Well, but definitely he would pour water down, our mother would, both of them, would pour water into a bucket
furnace.
That was in the furnace.
Uh-huh.
And we'd pour it right down through that waffle grill.
I don't remember that.
And I used to, when I was little, it was a mystery to me. I couldn't believe that they weren't putting the fire out, you know.
Uh-huh.
But they'd put it down and it'd go, and then all this steam would come up. And the smell, I can smell it in my nose right now, the way it would smell. Very wet, very
amazing. But you'd think I'd remember that, and I don't, because it must have gone on. And Pat didn't mention that, but she mentioned having all sorts of buckets and pails and towels things.
Well, that I don't remember. Isn't that funny?
To dampen the house.
I don't remember that.
Folks would go on a moisture kick.
But I do remember pouring the water down there.
I know there's spaces in those furnaces
yeah.
for that sort of thing. Well, let's jump to when you were older and you worked on the farm a year. First you started working up at the Rock County Breeders, didn't you? At Amos's office? 1 year when you were in college.
I think that was after. The first year I worked in for Dad in his office.
Well,
and
that's
that
what I thought, because they were saying, oh no, you didn't work in the office, you worked up at Rock County Breeders.
Who said, no, I didn't work in the office? My father?
Might have been Mother.
Gosh, I worked side by cheek by jowl with him.
Yeah, I said,
for
well, at least for part of the year then, she was down at the office.
No, I'll tell you how that went. I went to school for a year. I was a freshman.
Right.
I had my freshman year.
Right.
And then Dad was suffering from lack of manpower, you know, he didn't have enough help.
Mm-hmm.
He needed more people, and I wasn't real thrilled with the idea of going back to school at that moment. I had met Don Easton, and he had gone off to war, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know, it just, the whole climate was different. I
mm-hmm.
I felt suddenly grown up, and that I should do my part, and all that sort of thing. And
also, things were rough at home at that time. That
well, I think that's possibly,
that was
yeah.
the big Harriet upset.
No, that happened before I went. That's right. No, it happened that year. That's right.
I think it happened your freshman year in college.
Yeah, you're right.
And because that would have made Patty a junior and me a ninth grader.
Yeah.
And I think it happened when I was in ninth grade.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's...
So the things were a little wretched at home, which is interesting that you came home at that point rather than staying away from the wretchedness.
Well, maybe. I wonder if they were having a little financial difficulties, too. Do you think that's possible?
I don't know.
Recall that there were more reasons than my just... whimsically deciding, oh, you know, I don't want to go back to school. Dad needed me, or else felt he could use me, or thought he'd rather pay me to do something than... Well, maybe I just...
pay you to be at school.
Yeah, maybe I was reluctant, or... Anyway, I had the year off, and I worked for him at a monthly salary
mm-hmm.
at the office. I learned how to keep his books, and I checked the men in and out, and I enjoyed it immensely. And it gave me a great feeling of accomplishment, and knowing that I could do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was totally out of my experience, but that I could learn to do it quickly and easily, and I had that same feeling of I've got to be the best there is in this that I always did with everything I tried then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to get real fast on the adding machine, and
mm-hmm.
I had to make fewer mistakes than Mrs. Moore did, and I had to, you know,
Well, I remember very clearly.
I had to be the champion.
I remember very clearly that you were at the office because you and I and Patty. Patty would have been home then, too. This would have been your second year at college, so it would have been Patty's senior year in high school.
Yeah.
And I would have been a sophomore in high school, the year that you were home.
Yeah.
Now, it must have been my junior year that I was an only child. Now, it's hard to figure. Was Craig gone for my 10th and 11th grade? Or my 9th and 10th? Hard to... you didn't skip your senior year.
No.
Anyway, I was around, you were around, and Mrs. Moore and John Baker were fighting tooth and claw. They hated each other.
Yeah.
And there was always friction and irritation going on, and either you had the idea or we had it together of writing a murder mystery where either Mrs. Moore would be murdered and John Baker would have done it, or
vice versa.
Or they would have thought that they were the natural ones to do it. And I think we decided on John as the victim because nobody, you know, John was such a prig about everything. And I've got several stories in here about John of that nature. And but I remember that. I also know that you and I did something together because when I was in eighth grade, I wrote a story. And you wrote one, too. We took the first sentence and the last sentence. I think either I came up with the first sentence or you did, and we both liked it. And then we came up with the last sentence, and we decided, let's each write a story beginning with this sentence and ending with this sentence. And it was very interesting to see the shape that each of ours took. And I've still got mine, but I don't think you did with yours. Oh, yeah, I can even remember the first line. She must have been on a path, but she couldn't see her way because of the fog.
Wow.
And the last line was, the crisis is over, she will live. So you see, this was a coming through from dying.
Yes, now it's hitting me.
And you wrote one too, and they were both good. But that, when I was in eighth grade, that would have put you as a senior, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere I've got a bunch of letters I wrote Craig, and of course he'll know whether he was in ninth grade and 10th grade or... whether he was in 8th or 9th or 7th and 8th, I think he was in 8th and 9th. Anyway, I was an only child for 1 year, and I'm trying to figure out how that works in with you being home. I suspect it must have been that next year when you went back to college, Patty was off at college, and Craig would have been at Arizona. It must have been my junior year in high school when I was the only child.
Well, I worked for Dad for the summer and... the winter, and I think the following summer, and then I went back to school. And then it was after I graduated, I think. Maybe I worked in the summers for him as well, but after that, but I don't think so. I don't think I worked in the office, because he had to hire someone else to do my job. I did
it. It's turning black on this side. Should it do that?
No. I didn't work in the office. I did a big job in the office. I did a full, I worked full time. I did a full time job. So when I went back to school, he had to hire someone else. So then I couldn't very well come back
and pick it up in
the summers. But I do remember working for him, driving tractor, things like that.
Yeah,
in the fields.
I was saying you were driving the tractor once when something happened. I forget what it was.
I can't remember anything happening. Something bad? Some accident?
It wasn't, maybe it was when Freetag broke his arm, fell off the load and broke his arm. And then he says, and Joe was driving. And I said, was it her fault in the driving, or did you just hit a rough furrow or something? He says, oh, it was my fault. He says, I fell off. But you were driving when Ron Freetag fell off and broke his arm.
It's been awful, I don't remember that. I remember sitting in the seat of the tractor and singing as romantically as I could, as well as I could, as torch-like as I could, all the current ballads 40s ballads, you know, that I was hearing
at
school.
Nobody could hear you over the noise of the tractor.
That's what I presumed and hoped. But I was having a hoot of a time, and I was getting tan, and I enjoyed that kind of work real well. What else can I remember about this time?
Well, tell me about the office work.
Oh, that was fun. The men would start coming in from their routes, and they'd sit and check out their books and everything. And then they'd give me the book and the tapes and everything. And I don't really remember now what I would do with them. But I know it, I do too now. There were papers to fill out. They filled out, I guess, about what they took out and then what the returns were. There's purple finches again on there. And they would bring their money, and everything would have to add and total and come out in the wash, you know. And when it didn't, it was something they'd forgotten usually, you know. They had to make everything tally. They had to, they left 3 quarts for Mrs. So-and-so, and, you know. And what I had to do was separate out all the accounts so that Mrs. So-and-so would have the right number of quarts of milk at the end of the month that she had to pay for, and then the right number of butters and so forth. So they took it out of their books and put it on sheets. And then I'd take it off the sheets and add all their sheets together and come up with the daily totals. And then once a month I'd go through the books and do the bills. And then I'd do double entry bookkeeping in Dad's big books. I would take charge of all, keep track of everything.
Which I've never learned how to do.
Going on.
Well, that's a very budgeting, Ellie?
That's a very satisfying thing to know how to do. Not really, because I'd forgotten how to do it too. I never kept double books after I got married. but I've always had the feeling, ever since I worked in the office like that, that I'd be a good accountant, or that at least I could be an accountant.
I suspect I would have hated it.
Well, I enjoy it very much. I sit at my desk and I balance my checkbook and I figure out this and that, and I figure out how I can get more interest out of it. And if I don't pay this bill until such and such a time, I'll have more interest, and, you know, all those little ins and outs I enjoy very much. I like working with money, especially if I'm earning something by doing it.
I should do something with what money I have to make it start bringing in some returns.
You've got it in a bank getting something, haven't you?
Interest, yeah.
Well, the only thing you can do, if you have enough that you can leave it there for a while, then you can get lots more money.
Well, if you invested in...
Are
you kidding? I can't remember any particular incidents. Any funny incidents from the route, or people storming in, or any personal dynamics other than the general one that Mrs. Moore was a terrible irritant.
She and I got along fine most of the time. I don't recall that she bothered me very much.
She bothered everybody else.
Well, I know the men didn't get along very well with her. But there was some kind of a female, we're both on the same side sort of thing, I think. I'm not sure. I just don't remember any great problem with Mrs. Moore myself. I remember she didn't like to take any kind of criticism. She never made any mistakes. But now we know that she had reason to be defensive.
No, it was Florence Johnson.
It was. Oh, it wasn't
Mrs.
Moore.
Oh,
that's right. Florence Johnson worked there too when I was there. I remember. At least I think she did. Oh my. Minds are funny things, aren't
maybe
they?
Maybe you took Florence Johnson's place after she had embezzled.
Or maybe she took mine. Seems to me it happened after I was there.
Maybe. Well, you don't have any specific memories then of the office other than that you enjoyed it.
I feel myself sitting there, looking around. I can see it. I know what I can hear the men coming in and stomping up the stairs, and they usually come in the back.
You were up over the milk house.
No, I was down in the
Little house?
Yeah, in the little house on the first floor.
Oh, okay.
In what used to be the dining room.
Okay.
That's where my desk was.
All right.
Looking out the dining room windows. And I remember being dismayed when Dad decided not to sell butter anymore.
That would be during the war, and they topped up the churn.
They did?
Well, it was just taking a broom, and I guess maybe they couldn't get it out of the milk house without chopping it up.
Maybe, I remember Mr. Stamm standing there making butter, cutting it with the wires in the milk house. I remember that churn. Mm. And the cold room where they kept
describe the churn then. I have a very vague memory of it. It seems to me it was a huge barrel on its side.
Yeah, that's what it was. And it was sort of painted gray, whitish gray. And at least I think it was.
I didn't see it bomb, but I...
And it had a big opening, of course.
And was it over
toward... It had paddles in it. You know, horizontal, running the length of it, paddles.
Would the train be still and the paddles go?
I don't think so.
There'd be the buttermilk in it after it was done.
Yeah, there'd be fluid of some sort. I don't know if that was really buttermilk.
Well, it would be buttermilk, because we made real butter.
Yeah.
But it wasn't what's called commercial buttermilk.
No, it wasn't.
I
remember them swatting it with paddles and working the water out of it after it was done. There was still too much. They'd put out this great big glob of golden yellow butter onto a stand. And somebody would stand there and beat it around a while with some paddles, and gradually the water would run out of it.
A big mound, huh?
Yeah, a big mound of this lovely stuff.
And then how would they get it into a square?
Well, they'd put it into a frame. And then they'd run another frame down through it with wires that crisscrossed, and they'd get four pounds, I think, out of it that way.
Yeah, I don't remember Stamm cutting it. I know that George Schreiber, he was there during the war.
Oh, yeah, George Schreiber
He left in 43.
That's right, it wasn't Mr. Stamm. He never worked in the...
No, I didn't think Stamm did.
At least
not
in later years, not when I was there. No, that was with George Schreiber, that's right.
Yeah, George cut the butter.
I also remember going to Grandpa once in my... either that year that I worked there, or shortly before, with an idea for a new way to wrap the butter. I thought that it was an inconvenient way to wrap butter, inconvenient for the housewife, because whenever she wanted to cut some butter off or get some butter out of the pound, she'd have to unwrap it totally and then cut some off. And what I wanted him to do was I came up with a way of doing it too, was wrap it another way so that you could just open the end.
Mm-hmm.
And cut off a piece and then wrap it up again and slide it back in. So you wouldn't have to take it all out of the box and open it all up and cut it and then wrap it. And he listened to me and you know, listened sympathetically and with interest, but I could tell from the start that it was just not any way they were going to change that. And his explanation about why it wouldn't work or why he wasn't going to change it, I can't even remember, but it didn't persuade me. I just kept thinking that people didn't look enough at the other end of the operation, at how the housewife perceives things.
You remember how we did it at the lake? We just chopped it in half and dug it out.
No, I don't remember that. But
well, if we didn't have a butter tub of 2 pounds,
we'd
have the box, and then we just saw it in half, because I remember sawing it in half when it was my turn to set the table, and then you'd stick one half out and we'd just dig into it.
That's something we could do at the lake, but never at home.
Oh, never at home, and never the milk bottle at home on the table. And I don't even know if we were allowed the milk bottle on the table
or
at the lake.
Or the ketchup bottle or anything. Oh, I guess we must have used the ketchup.
Well, we got raised with class, you know?
Yeah.
As Bart tells Grandma. The other day we ran into word of Al Capp, and Daddy called him up and talked a little bit. Not Al Capp, Ernie Capp. You remember Ernie Capp, who used to babysit us?
No, I don't remember that he used to babysit us.
Well, you remember he had a rotten ear. And we called him Ernie with the rotten ear.
Yeah, I know. Now that you describe him, I remember.
Okay, well, I remember him very clearly because we used to climb up. I was littler then than you, and I would climb up in his lap and examine his ear.
Huh?
His
cauliflower
rotten ear. It wasn't a cauliflower ear. It had a big birthmark on it, which just looked like the rotten part of an apple, you know, just brown. And so we would climb up, Craig and I, and I don't know, maybe Patty too, I don't know if you did, and examine it. But I remember that he babysat us one night when Craig vomited. He called up and told Daddy about this, and I said, well, I remember it, because I remember lying there in that little bed with the fence around it and watching the vomit creeping closer to me and not getting up. But Ernie over the phone the other day said to Daddy that he had, with the help of the older girls, you girls had found him clean sheets and things like that, and gotten Craig up and cleaned up and taken all the bedclothes off and made the bed up fresh, and Craig and I went back to bed. So I'm just wondering if you remember any Ernie Caps.
No.
Do you remember playing ball with the help after supper?
No.
Do you remember calling Russell Julius? He'd call you Punky and you'd call him Punkier.
No.
Okay, I remember that.
Yeah, you told me that one, and I don't.
Okay. And you don't remember the murder mystery that we thought we'd write?
No.
Okay.
I remember standing up at the top of the stairs in the little house trying to get ready to go to a party. I think it was an eighth grade party. Michael... I can't remember the name of the fellow who was going to take me. I was going to drive downtown with Daddy and meet him at a certain spot. And anyway, I remember standing at the top of the stairs in the little house, and Mother told me I could wear some silk stockings of hers. And this was the first time I had ever had silk stockings on, and I would put on one and it would run. And I'd put on another one and it would run. I didn't know how to handle them, you know, I was much too rough. It took me a long time, and I finally got a pair of gray, silvery gray ones on, and oh my, they were pretty. My, they were pretty. I felt so good.
Remember at the top of the stairs that...
These were silk. These weren't nylon.
Oh, okay.
These are really silk. Yeah. Huh. This was before the war. This was before they even had invented nylon.
Do you remember Esther trying to get you to name one of your dolls Agnes?
Vaguely, something about that.
Well, here is what I heard eating lunch out with Grandpa and Grandma on Sunday. We got talking about Esther, and they're not eager to have me put anything about Esther in the book, and in some ways I'd like to, and in other ways I don't know. They brought Esther from Sparta, the orphanage there, when she was 5 years old, and her name was Agnes. Mother told it to me, something like Gloss. And when they got her home, they renamed her Esther, which was the name of the little girl that had died, her grandpas and grandmas, which seems to me an unfortunate thing to do. I think they should have kept her name Agnes. And Mother says that she had a doll named Agnes. Well, immediately I had a whole story in my mind of this little kid being given a new name and transferring her own name to keep some hold of some bit of her own personality, you know, because the name is so important. And calling her doll Agnes. And then I said, but Mother, Esther was 5 and Dad was 12, so how do you know about that? You know, I began trying to put it together, and she said, well, it must have been sitting around somewhere, you know, on a chair or something. She must have kept that doll so that I could have seen it. And then she said, and she tried to get Joanne to name one of her dolls Agnes. So it must have still been a name that meant something to her by the time you were a little toddler.
Isn't that interesting? Poor Esther.
It was a sorry story with Esther, and I think a lot of it was that they took her too old.
Yeah, didn't know how to treat her.
And Grandma, I'm sure, wasn't a particularly... good mother of a girl. I'm not sure how good she was of a boy, but what did I say about Esther? She stole a lot. Well, she could very well have developed those kinds of self-protective habits, in, you know, by the time she was 5 years old.
Sure.
Oh, I know. Bob wanted to adopt an older child at one point and was talking about it. And I think it was, well, it must have been after Bill left camp in the late 60s, mid to late 60s. And Bill advised very strongly against it. He said, because once you've got an older child, he said, their whole, you know, everything's formed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terribly difficult to do anything with an older child. Don't adopt an older child. And of course, that was the whole idea. Bob wanted a son and wanted a sort of an instant son, mm-hmm. so that he would adopt one that was older than Elspeth.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a companion to Elspeth and would also be a son. But I did not encourage that at all. And one of the reasons was because the Bill said, don't take an older child. And of course, he and Isla took four older children. Two very
much older.
They knew
what they were talking about.
Well, Bill certainly did, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Esther, and then also they never properly adopted Esther, and she's always felt like a second-class citizen, I'm sure. And Mother said, well, their idea was that Esther would adopt herself, that when she came to feel a part of the family and so forth, that she would ask to be adopted, or decide to be adopted. But she must have never come to that feeling. And then we conjectured some about why W.J. hadn't been more successful in his kindly ways with Esther.
Well, he was kindly, but he was also severe in a lot of ways, too. He was very judgmental. And I should imagine that a little girl who had already been exposed to stealing and stuff and had been caught and so on had a pretty well-developed guilt complex by the time she even moved into that family.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably found it hard to be frowned on. And
yeah.
I'm sure she was frowned on.
Yeah, I'm sure she was too. And Dad's recollection of her is practically, I said, well, it may be just his recollection at this point. If I'd caught him 15 years ago and asked him if he'd been willing to talk, he might have remembered more. But I said, you were 12 years old. Surely at the age of 12, to have a 5-year-old sister show up on the scene must have made an impression. Oh, come to think of it, then he did begin to remember things, and it had to do with her stealing. He had, and I didn't get this down, I'll put it now just so I've got it on tape. This was also at lunch the other day when we ate at the Holiday Inn. He said that he would go through the pennies that came back from the route, and that there had been pennies made, new Lincoln Head pennies, that had the designer's initials on them. And that after this penny had been issued, Congress had passed a law that on no coin would they have the signature or initials of the person that designed the coin. And so they didn't make any more. And Craig Ron at 12, or 13, or 14, or however old he was, knew that that these would be valuable. He already had a coin collection by then, and that these would become scarce. And so he would go through the roots, the change, and he would take out a certain kind of nickel and then these pennies that had the initials on them. And he said they were frequent, but not very frequent, like maybe 1 in 100, he said, or maybe even 1 in 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But he said he had quite a collection of those pennies with the initial on them, and Esther stole them and spent them all. So he didn't have them. And then Mother told how when she was there, Esther stole all her beautiful underwear, her trousseau underwear and lingerie and so forth. And when they finally found it, Mother hadn't really missed it right off. I mean, she'd know it was gone and wonder where it was, but she didn't put in an active search until one day Grandma had an idea and went and looked in Esther's little chest, and here was all Mother's French lingerie, pretty well shot because she'd been wearing it at school. And then she'd wash it out and secretly and so forth, and she would buy things secretly. And
mm-hmm. She'd change into things
at school, have them at her locker. And Mother says they had parties for her. Mother apparently did quite a bit for her, had given her some singing lessons and sponsored some parties and things for her. she would have been 16 or 17 when, see, she would have been a, I guess she was a senior in high school when she got pregnant, which cut out any chances of any further schooling or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And had the baby over at Chilpier, which mother said was grandpa's decision so that there would be no doubt in anybody's mind about the parentage. And then, as I recall, it wasn't the father that married her, but the brother of the father.
Yeah.
So I've always felt a little sorry for Esther, and yet as mother says, well, was it better to live on the Dogan farm with grandpa and grandma's faults than to, I thought you were going to lose a stitch there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, or to have stayed in Sparta. And I said, well, I imagine it was better to come to the farm.
Sure, she had a lot of contacts and opportunities.
What they had hoped for her. I wanted to see if I had 6 feet yet.
Here's something that Craig remembers very vaguely, and I remember a little less vaguely, and you played a big part in it, so maybe you remember it a little more strongly. Apparently, I told Craig stories, and we all told Craig stories, or elaborated on them, about an imaginary boy named Jacques. Does that draw a blank on you?
It's drawing a blank, I'm sorry.
And so one day we didn't produce Jacques because we couldn't. We couldn't produce the imaginary boy. But we produced Jacques' mother. And you were Jacques' mother. And I can still see you. We made you a home out in the corn crib. It was empty at that time. Jacques lived in the corn crib. And the corn crib was empty, and I can still see you sitting in a rocking chair that we moved out there, and you had on long clothes, and you had on a pair of glasses, which you didn't wear at the time, as far as I recall, sort of down on your nose, and you may even have been knitting. I see you sitting there being Jacques'
Whistler's mother.
You were, yeah, as close to Whistler's mother as we could make. And Craig, we brought Craig out to see Jacques' mother and talk about Jacques with the mother. And you carried it off, and I asked Craig if he remembered that, and he said, well, very vaguely. He said, I wanted to believe in Jacques, he said, and so probably I was trying very hard to believe in Jacques. And I said, I can see Joanne as plain as anything in my mind's eye, and she really did look like Joanne, even though she was dressed up. And it's hard to believe that even you as a little boy would have been taken in by Joanne as Jacques' mother. And he said, well, he guessed maybe it was because he wanted to believe in Jacques so hard, that so much that he believed that this woman was Jacques' mother. But you don't remember sitting out in the corn crib and being Jacques' mother?
I remember the corn crib, and that we played in it, and that it always smelled like mice. And it had a musty, smell.
Yeah.
Corn. Dusty.
Both you and Pat remember putting on plays on the sloping roof
on
of
the
that
sloping
shed
roof
out behind.
And climbing up. It was always a little bit of an adventure to get onto the roof because it wasn't really easy. I mean, there was a little bit of a reach there, a moment of an act of faith to get up onto the roof from the fence or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit scary.
Because I don't remember that at all, and yet Patty mentions that in her memoirs, too, that I came on.
Well, maybe Pat and I did it mostly. It was, I seem to recall dusk, usually dusk.
Mm-hmm.
Might be that you and
Craig
were in bed.
Put to bed,
and,
or were getting our baths. Or
yeah, and Pat and I were up on the roof making up stories and acting out things. And
prancing around. It was a perfect theater, so you or Pat, for people to sit out and watch. And you to put the thing on the sloping roof.
Yeah, it was neat.
I don't remember that. Do you remember though the long, not the bull walk that went round and round where Patty caught her foot, and we would all walk in a row the day that Patty caught her foot. You're the one that left them through the switch. And
gosh, I don't remember that either.
Well, Patty got
terrible?
Her foot caught and started going around.
Ooh.
And you had the presence of mind to leap and pull the switch. And there were all four of us. We were walking in a row, just walking like the bull, holding on to the rail. When Patty caught her foot. And
my goodness.
Screamed. I remember that.
I don't think I've had the proper gratitude shown me all these years from Pat for having saved her life, or her leg, or her foot.
Certainly her leg from being mangled. But then out behind that spot where you have did theatricals on the roof was a long tree trunk or else telephone pole. It was probably a tree trunk because it tapered off into a fairly small bore at the end, about that big, and came down more to a point. And this was where they would walk the bull. It was on a pivot. And the heavy end was in closer, and then mm-hmm. this sort of long switch came out, and they would put the bull on one end of it, and then he could walk in a circle.
Go round and round.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the bull walking out there?
Yeah.
Do you remember fastening Craig to that and having him walk?
No! But it sounds like the kind of thing we'd do.
I think we would all walk on it occasionally, but I have the feeling that Craig, because he was the littlest, could be
coerced
into things, such as being put on the end of the bull thing and walking. Well, I remember that, but I wish I had some incident to go with it. And I can also remember little Jerry getting close to the bull once and how scared everybody was. He went right up to the bull and somebody saw him and jerked him away, but he could have been gored and killed.
Oh, yeah. I remember being on a runaway horse.
Just a farm horse?
One of those big fat rockabye horses, the rocking chair horses that we had, the work horses. I was on the back of a very comfortable old workhorse, and he decided he didn't like it, I guess, and he started to run down the lane. He really ran towards the creek,
uh-huh.
and there was a gate up. And my memory, and way back in the dim recesses somewhere, has it that he went over the gate with me, but I guess that can't be possible. A great big heavy horse. I don't think he could have done that. He probably just came to a halt, scaring me to death. I probably was afraid he was going to go over the gate. But I didn't fall off. I just remember being scared to death. That might be why I didn't find horseback riding enchanting mm-hmm. when I was
older. You had that early scare.
I had that early scare. It was probably still in me somewhere.
The
Old Kit, I think it was.
Old Kit would have been quite old, because Kit was the one that Grandpa rode and broke his leg on in 1917. The horses lived into their 20s, you know. So it could very well have been in the early 30s. Kit wouldn't have been too old a horse. I mean, could have been an old horse at that point. Kit could have been a fairly young horse, and Grandpa
might
broke
be
his
that,
leg.
Might just be that that's the only horse name I remember at the moment.
Beth and Barney were the ones I remember.
Beth
Molly.
And Barney.
Oh, Molly.
Yeah.
Remember Kit at all, so maybe Kit was old.
But
know.
I remembered I knew Kit, but whether he was the one I rode, I don't know.
I have a scene from my childhood that I swore up and down was an accurate memory, and I was told was not an accurate memory, and now, of course, when I'm older, I know it isn't an accurate memory, but I was so positive at the time, and that involved a horse that was followed by the pony. The pony had an attraction to this horse, and then there was a lamb, a sheep. And the sheep followed the pony. Now that part of the memory is true.
Yeah.
There was this horse that the pony followed and the sheep followed the pony.
Yeah,
they were
I remember that.
A little procession.
Yeah, that was cute.
But I can remember the horse going past the big house and the pony behind and sheep behind. And I swear that that horse was as tall as the second story window, sort of like one of Hannibal's elephants, you know. And I was told, no horse could be that big. It was just because I was so little that horse looked so big.
Yeah.
And yet I knew the difference between a big horse and a horse that stood as high as the second story window. So I was furious at being told this. So I can't make sense out of that memory, except that I do remember that little procession. I should ask Grandpa about that procession and see if he remembers it. But you do, huh?
Yes. Vaguely, I would not have come up with it, but mm-hmm. when you described it, then suddenly I could see it.
Do you remember?
I don't remember that we had sheep. How did
we
get a sheep?
It was just a stray. It was just a singleton.
How did he happen
to
be there?
I don't know what he was doing. I don't know.
How did we ever happen to get goats?
I should ask Grandpa how come he brought that first goat home. I think that once we had a goat and somehow evolved to mine, how did it happen to become mine?
I don't know. Was the first one we had butter?
Yeah, and it became Jackie's goat. And why it became my goat, I don't know. Was it just because I assumed ownership, that I showed the most interest in it?
Maybe you had wanted a goat, and he brought it home because you wanted it.
Maybe so, but I certainly remember it coming home and trying to get it to drink out of the bottle,
so,
and the poor little
cute thing
couldn't suck, and it was a couple of days, and all of a sudden it caught on, and then with the rapidity with which it down an entire bottle. Just,
and that little tail going the
and
whole
the little
time.
Tail just waggling as fast as it possibly could when she was drinking it. And then she always wanted to get in the house, and whenever the door was opened or somebody came out and she could streak in, she would pivot a turn right inside the front door, gallop up, you know, those stairs, through Craig's and my bedroom onto the sleeping porch, and jump up on Mother and Dad's bed.
And make marbles.
And, that was as far as she could get, you see. It was the farthest point of the house, and she'd just go, you know, and be up there. And then somebody'd have to go up and drag that goat down.
Oh my, and then I remember the hard little head with the
little nubbins. She never got
horns,
but the other
goats
did.
She'd push against you with her.
Yeah.
As if she was trying to rub them out.
and a goat that does have horns, I discovered from my later goats, doesn't so much push against you as tries to hook you with them.
Yeah.
Which is what they tried to do to Mrs. Burek and so forth, and drove her nuts, my goats up at the other house.
Oh.
Let's see, I had another thought there I wanted to mention. Oh, it's funny how you can remember your certain feelings.
Yes.
And
smells, I remember.
And smells. And I find that the feeling or the incident frames the picture. In other words, I can see the scene at the time of that feeling or picture. Whereas if somebody were to say to me, describe such and such a spot, I would draw a blank. But if something went on in that spot that I remember, then I can see it. For instance, I can remember a very early feeling, possibly my first feeling of recognizing being chagrined or sneaked, which was that we had somebody taking care of us, one of Mother's help. And I insisted up and down and round that I did not need a nap and I did not want a nap. And I must have been 3, you know, I don't know how old I was. But I was put down in a bed up in the little bedroom with the bed with the fence around it, which ended up eventually there. I don't remember if it was there at that point or not. But this was a crib with the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down vigorously, screeching and protesting that I did not want a nap, that I did not need a nap. And then the next thing I knew, I woke up several hours later. And I can remember lying there in that little crib and remembering the vehemence of my protest that I didn't want a nap, and realizing that I'd been asleep, and feeling distinct chagrin that I had been wrong.
That's funny.
But I can see that whole little room, and that's the only way I can see that little room. For instance, another
spot. The one at the top of the stairs.
To the right, where you and Pat slept in the other room.
Yeah.
In by the bathroom, and I can remember that room because we had the measles together in that room, and also we'd come in there and we'd play bear. One of you guys would be the bear, and we'd go around and around those beds.
In down between
them.
Yeah. Oh boy, do I remember.
Under
that.
And over and under and over. And at first, you know, even if you were the one that was chasing, pretty soon you got the feeling of being chased because there was somebody right behind you, and that panic.
Yeah.
And then we'd also look through your window out at the airplane light.
Yeah. Oh, that used to scare me, that airplane
light. That was a scary airplane light.
I don't know why that was a scary airplane light. Why did airplane lights scare us when we were kids?
It came sweeping around and we'd watch it. And then Craig and I would sometimes go and sit in our closet and listen to you guys. Because the two of you carried on with such wonderful games. You had one called Preacher, where you would lie with your knees up and Patty would try to stand on your knees and preach a sermon. And you would make it hard for her. And I remember another one where you had a kind of a charade that you were supposed to guess, and I can remember you being under your bedclothes, and then you'd stick your pop out and say, "Ee!" And then you'd go back under the bedclothes and pop out and say, "Ee!" And that was the name Bobby. You were bobbing in and out of the bedclothes, and I remember that one.
Oh my gosh.
But you and Patty had marvelous games. Craig and I had some, but we always found your games very fascinating when we were allowed in. And, of course, we've played a lot of bed games, you know.
Oh, my, yes. We must have been put to bed too early or something. And I remember reading as long as I could by the light of that window next to my bed in the summertime, you know, you could. And I'd read until I could just barely make out the letters on the page.
Well, one problem I'm having with this book is relating incidents that involve siblings. I find quite easy to include Craig. I think I told you that,
yeah,
because I think Craig and I were probably thrown together more. And we're a defense against being pushed around by two older sisters, too, and that Craig was sort of my little sidekick. But I don't... It shows you in some ways how self-centered you are, and yet in the lake stories, I think I have a stronger sense of everybody playing together as a whole,
mm-hmm,
and doing things, walking around the lake together. But you know, I do remember us all going down to the creek together. Do you remember ever fishing in the creek?
No.
We used to fish with bent pins. And even
did we ever catch anything?
No, of course not. There wasn't anything to catch in the creek by then. But furthermore, even then I thought, you know, a bent pin is not a good thing to fish with. And yet all the books, you know, that we would read, children would go and fish with bent pins, and so that would seem the thing you were supposed to do. But even at that age, my tender age, I knew you had to have a barb on a hook in order to keep the
keep the fish.
The fish, and I wondered how could they ever have caught fish with the bent pins. Well, we'd go down and sit on the bank and fish and never catch anything. Oh, here's something. Do you remember anything about... Oh, you already told me some about the marvelous houses we would make out there in front with the boxes from the...
I think Pat must have with Craig. I don't remember.
The boxes that the milk bottles came in were those,
yeah,
wonderful crates.
Oh, yeah, we made some terrific...
And we'd put
we
them
call
on...
them huts. We would
huts.
Make a
and
hut.
Sometimes they'd be double-deckers.
Yes.
We'd have our work. Box and so forth, and sometimes they'd be all spread out, and we'd thatch them with that marvelous grass.
Gosh, yes.
Which was a grass, not a hay. I mean, it was a
we
grass
used to make
hay.
Them next to Grandma's house, too, over there by the woodpile, in front of the woodpile, because that's where a lot of the boxes were, and we didn't have to...
carry them as far?
Drag them.
My strongest memory is out in front of that mid-area there, where they would have paved that little field in front of the house there between our house and the mailbox that would be the diagonal. And there'd be all this beautiful, sweet-smelling hay to...
Well, we probably
with.
Did that, too. I sort of remember
But I remember
next
dragging them from wherever they were. Or I remember playing on the woodpile a lot. We had our own houses in the woodpile, and we'd go visiting, and it was... The woodpile was a marvelous place to play.
Yeah. Sometimes there were kittens in the woodpile. There were certainly chickens out there.
Oh, there were lots of chickens. I really remember watching the chickens a lot. But those houses that we built, what was I going to say about them? There was so much raw material.
Mm-hmm.
Modern kids in their suburban neighborhoods where there isn't all these raw materials to do things with. You could just start, oh, I know what I was going to ask you about, because I was fairly young at the time. Do you remember taking one of those boxes or two of those boxes, and we'd go down and we'd stick it out on the road and make a sign for a roadside stand and go down into Grandma's basement and get carrots and potatoes and apples out of the root cellar and put them out there and wait for hours, and nobody ever stopped, ever.
No.
Nobody ever bought anything.
No, I don't remember that.
Well, maybe once a year or so. We decided to have a roadside stand.
I remember making mud pies at the farm, at the lake, and having rows and rows of things.
Yeah, I remember the mud pies, and I put those into one of the books, but into Ghost Boat. But I remember making them at the farm, too, over near the barn.
Yeah.
And I think Patty mentioned once, or somebody, of having a whole beautiful bunch of mud pies that were too beautiful to throw out, and I think she balanced them up on top of the bins there, up around the area where the sleigh is, or else maybe even set them on their tray, which would have been a plank, up in the sleigh or something.
We used to put those little buttons of weeds. I've forgotten the name. Pigweed or something?
I don't know what they are, but I remember
those little buttons.
And
they tasted good.
They tasted funny, but we ate them.
Well, they were fresh and crispy.
You could peel. They had little tiny peelings on those.
Yeah.
And they looked like little cushions. They looked like this.
Right. And we'd pick them and make plates. We'd put them on our... I thought they were... that's a side view.
That's
a cross
view.
Cut, yeah.
And the top, they look sort of like this.
Yes.
See, and then they all... The things you'd peel would come in like this.
Yeah.
Like on an avocado, sort of. And it was almost as if they had the little button in the middle.
They were good.
And they were about that big, weren't they? Not any bigger than that.
Yeah, they're about that size. And we'd pick a lot of them. We'd put them on our plates, like peas or something. And put them on our mud pie.
Well, how did we know that little weed wouldn't hurt us to eat that little thing?
I don't know.
I haven't seen
it
in ages. I wonder what it is. That would be interesting to look up in something.
Maybe we have it in our yard and don't know it. Haven't looked.
But we were down closer to the ground in those days.
Yes, we surely were. Do you have a lot of stuff about the cow tank?
No, practically nothing about the cow tank.
Oh, my.
Tell me your thoughts. Well, you saved me once. I went down and I thought, this is it, goners.
And
I must have been about 3 years old. You grabbed the hold me.
Oh, I have all kinds of gratitude coming that I have never collected.
And I remember my feeling. I was all sort of matter of fact as I went down. I didn't feel any panic. I just thought, this is it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I knew, Joanne had hauled me and pulled me up to the top again, and my thoughts were still just as matter of fact, well, this isn't it. I'm still... And so I went out about my business. But I think I remember it clearly enough so that it must have made an impression on me that I hadn't, you know, I mustn't fall. And yet sometimes you did fall on account of it was sometimes slimy.
Yes, I remember how slimy it could be on occasion and how bad smelling it was sometimes.
Mm-hmm. They occasionally put stuff in it to keep it clarified. And
well, they'd clean it out from time to time too, of course. But
sometimes there'd be floating green stuff.
Yeah, floating
it.
Slime, floating algae. Of various kinds, and it was always okay. You know, it was never unhealthily dirty, but it would be unpleasant sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember also walking across the yard to get to it.
Yeah, you had to pick your way
picking
along the cow pies.
Cow pies, and feeling as I got older, more and more fastidious about the whole thing, until I just couldn't swim in it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose it was about that time that we went to the lake. But maybe not, because I was 7 when we first went to the lake. You kids must have been quite small. Craig was 2, you'd have been what?
Maybe have been 4 or so.
So, you don't remember the cow tank very well then?
Oh, I remember swimming in it. I don't remember
any particular
scenes. I was told about the good woman going to heaven that I was.
Uh-huh.
But I can remember swimming in it. And I can remember how the sun would be hot,
yeah.
And we would take our finger and get it wet and draw pictures.
Oh yes,
on that rim,
mm-hmm.
The flat rim, you see, and then the sun would dry them up, and you would try to get your picture drawn with the wet so that you'd have a complete picture or enough of a picture before the sun would dry
it
up.
Yeah, it would be hot. I remember hot, hot summers there. I wonder how they happened to let us do that, swim in the cow tank.
I don't remember being supervised in the cow tank either. I don't remember some adult standing around and watching
it. Well, it was 2 feet deep is all, so I guess they figured that we were
Yeah, but you could have drowned in there. Maybe it was that you were responsible enough and big enough that you'd haul any of us out.
I learned how to swim in there.
Mm-hmm.
We all learned how to swim in there.
I learned how to swim at the lake. I didn't learn to swim until I was 7.
Oh.
So that I didn't learn to swim in the cow tank.
We had a slide for a while.
Yeah, I don't remember that except being told about it.
I don't remember much about it.
So maybe when we were considerably younger, there was certain supervision. And
I think
we got
Mother
older,
went
you
with us when we were little. I think she was there. I just don't remember a lot.
I remember the rush across the cow yard to get away from M-12.
Oh, yeah.
And Craig being the last one under or through the fence. And I don't remember any adult with us at that time. Just the panic and rushing home. And there was this cow that was after us. Mig remembers M-12. She and
yes.
Winnie, she and Winnie had a bad time with M-12 out in the pasture. We called her up and told her, asked her about it. She had told Paul to remind them of M-12.
Oh my.
Well, we've gotten quite a few things here.
Yeah.
I've gotten down some of my memories.
And you've got it straight about Bounce.
Now, tell me what there's to get straight about Bounce.
About Bounce biting me.
No, repeat that. That never got onto tape, did it?
Bounce and I were playing alone in the horse barn.
Okay, see, when did we discuss this? A while back. Was Pat there?
Yeah, he called me up.
Oh, okay. And we didn't have any tape. Okay, you and Bounce were playing in the horse barn.
Alone.
Alone.
It was after supper, as I recall, one night. And it's still light. Summer, it must have been. They had put bales of hay in the horse barn, and they had started to take them out and use them. And so there was a...
Bales? And they started baling
them? Yeah, they were bales.
And you were quite a big kid.
Well, I don't know, Jackie. I don't recall that I was. I think I was only 7.
Well, then what probably happened is they might have bought some hay.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a hay baler.
No, but there, I distinctly remember bales, and I tried to, I wanted to put him down in this hole. I wanted to get down there too,
mm-hmm.
with him. And there was this hole that was there after they'd taken out some of the bales, you see. What it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice, neat little place to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up the dog to try to put him down there, and he didn't want to go down.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have it, and he just went
onto your chin.
And he grabbed me, and the scars are still there, one here and one there. And I had...
Above her lip and below her chin. I mean, below her lip and below her chin. Okay.
No, right here. And I had the instinct or something to grab him. Well, I just grabbed what I could. I grabbed him, trying to pull him off. I got him around
mm-hmm.
the neck, and I guess I squeezed him tight enough that he opened and let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran screaming home, and I was all bloody, and I guess that's when they got rid of Bounce. But I was trying to get him to go down that hole.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he shouldn't have bitten me, no matter what I was trying to do.
No, but he was a crotchety little dog.
Yeah, he was.
And not the sort that you really played with, so I'm surprised that you were trying to get Bounce to do anything. Because I thought we had long learned that you didn't try to get Bounce to do anything except drive him into a frenzy, saying, sick 'em Bounce, and then opening that basement door and letting him leap down, or else when you were outside, he'd leap up a tree.
Yeah.
There was one tree that he would race up and rip the bark from.
Well, I was very foolish, that's for sure. It was probably because I didn't have anybody there to play with, and I was trying to play with Bounce.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was alone, why Pat and you and everybody were not there, but maybe it was one of those summer times when we used to come home one by one from the lake to spend a little time with
maybe.
Come home with Daddy, give him a little company to come home to.
I don't really remember that. I remember once coming home to go to the dentist and once coming home to go to a birthday
I remember
party.
Hitchhiking home with Dad once.
Were you the one? Daddy asked me.
Yes.
About hitchhiking home, and
yeah.
I drew a complete blank, and he said, well, how could you forget that? Now, maybe it was you. Tell me about hitchhiking home with Daddy.
I don't know why we hitchhiked home from the lake. Maybe Mother needed the car for something.
This is encouraging, because I thought maybe, you know, since Dad didn't pay us a whole lot of attention, that if I'd done anything as exciting as hitchhike home with Daddy, that I would have remembered it.
It was pretty exciting. I do still
remember.
All right,
well, you remember it. Well, tell me about hitchhiking home with Daddy.
Well, as I say, I don't remember why we did it. It had something to do with, I think I had a dentist appointment. I'm not sure. But anyway, we had to hitchhike home. Maybe he left the car for Mother. I don't think it was a matter of the car breaking down or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But there seemed to be some reason why we had to get home anyway. And we hitchhiked. And I remember the thing that, the reason I suppose I remember it, not thoroughly, but just remember it, it stands out in my mind, it's one of those things I can feel, is that he really paid attention to me, and we talked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He talked to me, and I talked to him, and he listened. And I've forgotten what we talked about, but it was things like world affairs, or I mean, I asked him to explain something either to me, and it was very nice. That's all I remember. I don't remember who gave us a ride or how long we had to wait or anything
about
it.
But you did make it.
But
did
I did
hitchhike
it. Oh, sure.
Well, I'll tell Dad then that you were the one that he hitchhiked with. And I can remember one-on-one time with Dad, I suppose, because it was unusual.
Yeah, that's probably why. Well, of course, hitchhiking was unusual.
Hitchhiking was unusual. But what was that time I was recalling? Oh, once up at our farm. I saw something glowing way down in the pasture towards the catalpa forest that shouldn't have been glowing down there. I mean, what was a fire doing down there? Nobody lived there and anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I pointed it out to Daddy. It might have been when I was a junior in high school and was home alone, because I was the only one that went with him. Anyway, he got interested in what this spot of fire was, and so we walked, and it was a coolish night.